After an attack is over and the all clear has been sounded, arrangements will be made as soon as possible to treat any people who are ill or injured. If anyone dies while you are kept in your fallout room, move the body to another room in the house. Label the body with name and address, and cover it as tightly as possible in polythene, paper, sheets, or blankets. If, however, you have had a body in the house for more than 5 days, and if it is safe to go outside, then you should bury the body for the time being in a trench or cover it with earth and mark the spot of the burial.
Welcome to the Something Wicked podcast, and welcome to the first episode in our nuclear season.
Yes.
So we're going to be covering all things nuclear war over the next few episodes. Tonight we're going to be talking about Protect and Survive and Threads. I'm joined by Dave. I'm currently broadcasting from under some doors, which are placed against the wall at a precise 45 degree angle. And I've got all my shit around me as well.
Absolutely. I'm in my utility room that I've boarded up, and I've brought loads of cushions into it, along with some old mattresses and a couple of old doors. And I filled it with tin mackerel and San Miguel.
Nice one. Nice one, Dave. I'm jealous.
No, that should see us through. Through.
I've got my, I have got my Protect and Survive booklet, Dave. I bet you haven't.
Of course I haven't, Lee. No, I'm not as well organised as you.
So, yeah, I've got this. Very useful. What does strike me is that the there's the little drawings of the bloke, obviously, the man of the house.
Yeah.
Getting everything ready.
The wee fella getting things sorted.
He's breeze blocking up his windows. He's stuffing sandbags up his chimney. He's moving his wardrobe against a big window. He's painting his windows white. And he's preparing the inner refuge, which is consisting of three doors, similar to mine, on which he's placing lots of suitcases and plastic bags full of unknown contents.
Right.
He's also, what else is he doing? Yeah, so he's getting the stocks together. He's got, blimey, you do need a lot of shit, Dave. This is quite amazing. You do need a big fallout room, because basically you have to move your whole house into one room.
Yeah.
But the thing is, Dave, in these pictures, the guy looks like he's absolutely loving it.
Absolutely.
He's kicked the kids out and the wife, told her to go down the shop, get some supplies, and he's got his tools out and he's loving it.
It is literally like, let's get ready for the bomb. Come on,
everybody. Now, the thing about Protect and Survive is that these leaflets were not actually distributed, Dave. I think it's a bit of a misconception that every household received one of these. I mean, it was initially kept quite secret, and it was only distributed to local authorities. It was first printed in, I think, 1976, and it was supposed to be part of a larger campaign involving TV adverts, radio broadcasts, etc. But some of the newspapers got wind of it, and they kept asking about it. You know, we're going to need this in case things escalate. So where is it? So they did bow to public pressure, and they printed it in 1980. You could buy it if you wanted to. But the idea was, if there was going to be an imminent nuclear war, it would be given to every household about 72 hours before the war was supposed to begin, which isn't a lot of time to do everything that the thing suggests in order to get your fallout room ready.
It's not giving anybody any time at all, is it?
You know, you've got to take into account the absolute sheer panic that people will be feeling as well.
Do you think that the local authorities, really, what they were thinking is, oh, they'll just treat it like people do when they're on a plane with the safety manual? Yeah. You know, they might have a little glance at it. But ultimately, they think, well, if we go down, we go down. And as if I'm going to do these things in some kind of calm manner if the place goes down.
No, so I do reckon there was loads of blokes around the UK that were disappointed they didn't get to do it.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
I bet. Probably looking forward to doing all that. Because there is this big thing, it tends to be blokes. Have you heard of preppers?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say that there's people who were doing things like well ahead of the game and, you know, digging out the back garden, building like tunnels into the earth and creating like a fallout shelter and all sorts of shit, which is amazing. You know, I mean, fair play to people who actually went to that length. What gets me about all this as well is what kind of fucking world do you want to be living in after that? After the ultimate like destruction of civilization? You know, do you want to really sort of climb up your ladders and pop the fucking the lid that you've camouflaged with grass or whatever into this fucking this totally singed, scorched world? You know, and you've been living down there for 3 years because you've been waiting for the fallout to eventually go, but you've touch and go, you know, and then who's there? What's there? You know?
Yeah. This is the lie of Protect and Survive, isn't it? Is that it doesn't go into any of that. It basically gives you the impression that if you stay in your inner refuge, your fallout room, for 14 days, the fallout should have cleared by then. And you'd be all right. And you can resume life as you knew it.
Breathe in the fresh air. After those 14 days.
And what happened when this was produced, Dave, is that there was a massive backlash from the likes of CND and the Greater London Council, who did their own advertising campaigns, which were mocking the information in this booklet and also trying to tell the truth about what would actually happen in the aftermath. And there was this quite famous poster produced by the GLC. Let's see if I can find it. I've got this other book here. The poster was quoting... Let me find it. Okay, so this poster that was put on a billboard, I believe, by the Greater London Council is actually quoting page 24 of Protect and Survive Manual, which says, on hearing the all clear, you may resume normal activities. And it's accompanied by a picture of a city that's just been totally razed and destroyed. I thought that was brilliant.
Decimated bloody world.
I think the idea of this booklet was to provide some comfort.
Yeah.
Even though it was a huge lie.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, you can say, if you do these things, you've got a better chance of actually surviving the initial blast and the subsequent fallout. But like you say, you know, what are you coming out to? You're coming out to utter devastation. You're not going to last long anyway, are you?
No, you're not. You're not at all. I think certainly as we got into the 1980s, we all became very aware of that, didn't we? And with it. Yeah. With it grew this real sense of paranoia about the possibility of a nuclear war. And I remember being, you know, when I first found out, it might have even been in the very early 80s or late 70s that there was a bomb that could destroy everything.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like terrifying. That kind of filtered out over the years, and by the time we got into the mid-80s, it was like a really, really horrifying thought. And, you know, speak to so many people like yourself, like my wife, and other people who of a similar age from around that time, who all had this feeling of real negativity, even this feeling that it would happen at some point. It would
happen.
When, ironically, we're probably more at risk now than we've ever been.
Well, you're dead right, Dave. It was a massive thing for us as teenagers. I think it seemed to impact on teenagers more than it did on adults, because I've spoken to adults about that, including my parents and people I work with, and they don't see it in the same way. You know, they're probably too distracted by other things going on. And
just living.
I think if you were a kid and you were, because you can't make sense of things necessarily, understand the likelihood of this happening. In reality, I don't think we actually did come that close, did we?
No, we didn't.
But you're right, the paranoia was absolutely huge. And I remember just normal conversations at school would be around, what would you do when the 4-minute warning goes off? Who would you shag? Yeah. You know, all things like that.
Just the thought, sometimes I would be at home and just think, could you imagine if the siren just went off now? How would you feel? I mean, God, that was a terrifying thought. That siren. You know, that, oh my God, if you started hearing that, could you imagine it?
Mm-hmm.
You would be
pure panic
with turtle's head for every teenager around them.
Yeah.
Every kid, you know, you'd be dropping your chopper like a fucking flash and running crying into your house, wouldn't you?
Hoping your dad's finished the fallout, Schultz.
Yeah. Hurry up, Dad!
Dad, what are you doing?
Hurry up.
Trying to get the doors off. Fucking hell, I've got the wrong screwdriver. Go find us a posse.
What are you doing? Fuck the fucking Stretch Armstrong and the evil Knievel toy car, the toy motorbike. Forget that. Get in the fucking shelter.
But there was also other things. I mean, I was trying to think when I first became aware of nuclear bombs and possibility of nuclear war. And I think it was probably the CND stuff. You know, you'd see it, the women at Greenham Common protesting. And I can only think that was my first exposure to it, because Threads didn't come out till 84. But before that, Two Tribes, you remember Two Tribes by Frank Ocean Hollywood? Oh, yeah. That was massive in highlighting nuclear war. And that came out actually before Threads. Threads was broadcast in September of 84. And that came out, I think it was around June. So not too long before. But I think we didn't actually know what a nuclear war would look like until we saw Threads. And if you did see Threads, then at that age, you will know what a life-changing thing it was.
Yeah. I seem to remember something else. There was something else. Was there a TV show, a documentary or something? And it showed part of that Protect and Survive video that was there with that guy buried in the oak tree.
Patrick Allen.
Patrick Allen, yeah.
Yes.
You know, and it was like, really, because it was so kind of formal and so sort of calm, it made it even more frightening, the whole concept of it. It seemed like something other, I suppose, to a teenager in the 1980s, it was something otherworldly about the whole thing, really. Completely surreal idea. And then when you watch Threads, you go, God, wow, you know, that really brings that surrealism home for Threads. But maybe the reason why our parents and the generations above us weren't perhaps as bothered, if you like, by it, is that they'd heard it all before. They already knew. They already knew the possibilities. And, of course, they'd lived through the Cuban Missile Crisis, which must have been a fucking terrifying few days. Because if that was the closest, if the Russians hadn't backed down over Cuba, it could have been, see you later, alligator, here come the bombs. You know, and it got to that stage, hadn't it?
Do you think we would have been involved in that?
Well, if we hadn't been involved, we would have been impacted by it. And anybody with any sense living in Manchester would have known, you know, where we were at the time, would have known that. Because if it meant that America were going to just detonate a bomb towards Moscow or on Cuba, which would have then had a chain reaction with Moscow, and that's what was being talked about. And it was literally Khrushchev trying to call bloody Kennedy's bluff and Kennedy standing firm.
Yeah, so it's a really good film, isn't it, on that? Is it 13 Days it's called?
It's a fabulous film, yeah. With Costner and the two actors who played the Kennedy brothers, who are excellent in it. Yeah, it's a cracking film, man. It really explains that, the tension and the paranoia about that whole incident. I think that, more than anything, brought home the real perils of the potential of nuclear war. Mm-hmm. I think that was it. And I think we were living... So I think our parents were living in the legacy of that. They already understood the dangers of it. And they perhaps were not necessarily being laissez-faire about it, but they were probably thinking that, well, we've been to that stage and nobody was going to take that risk. You know, we had the Iron Curtain, we had this division, there was this stockpiling of nuclear weapons, but was anybody going to be mad enough to do it?
Yeah.
And I think that's how, I think that's how our parents felt.
Yeah.
But it was different for us. We felt very vulnerable.
We did. And what you were saying there about seeing some of the Protect and Survive stuff, I think you might have been talking about like a panorama documentary,
that's
which I think
it.
Was introduced by a very young Jeremy Paxman.
I think it was. That's
and
it.
That was when they did show some clips of the public information films. Because as I say, they were not actually broadcast because we never reached the point where they needed to be. Mm. But yeah, they are great, aren't they? You've got, you know, they were done by the same company that did the Charlie Says
were they?
Films.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and Crystal Tips and Alistair. Do you remember that?
I do indeed. Well, I've often said, Lee, we should do a podcast on the whole public information films.
Yeah. You
know, they are brilliant. And I think they in themselves created this kind of paranoia amongst young people in the 70s and 80s, you know. Mm. So if that Protect and Survive had come out as well, my God, you know, because one of them, slightly different because it wasn't one of the, I don't kind of categorise it in the same way, but the AIDS one was very much like that as well.
Yeah.
It was like fucking terrifying, you know. But we had this clash of things, didn't we, in the 80s that were coming out as we had this... really this terrible like pandemic, so you didn't quite know how you were gonna live your life without coming into contact with AIDS, you know.
Well, and, this is it, Dave, if you think
and you didn't know
it.
How you're gonna live your life without coming into contact with uranium.
Yeah, I mean the 70s and 80s, if you were a kid of that era, and that, so you're growing up with these really scary public information films,
correct,
weird TV. And then you get into the 80s, you've got the threat of the IRA, you've got the threat of nuclear war.
Yeah.
And you get through that, or you think, you know, you're halfway through that, and then fucking AIDS comes along just as you're about to sort of go out and sow your wild oats. I mean, absolutely. it was like you were cursed.
It's like,
how
did we get through it? There was an element of a real feeling that, you know, they were trying to terrify us into our sort of adolescence and into our early adulthood. You know,
it bloody worked.
It did work.
We wouldn't have it any other way, I don't think.
No. Good times, mate. Good days.
And I'm going to mention a couple of great books, which I'm sure some of our listeners will know of, called the Scarred for Life books, which are about the 70s and 80s and how terrifying it was for you if you were growing up. They're not available on Amazon, but you can get them from lulu.com, and they are absolutely fantastic, and they are bringing out a third one which is said to feature Threads. Oh, which brilliant. I can't wait for. It might be out later this year.
Good plug there, mate. Good plug. I like that. I think we should always be plugging things that are of value to the listeners to the pod and informative.
The way those books came about is they were just like two guys. They were not writers themselves. And they were just having a bit of a chinwag and they were remembering things from the childhood. And then they both came to the conclusion. It was like, fucking hell, it was terrifying, wasn't it, being a kid? Then the more they looked at what was around, from comics to TV adverts to children's dramas, it was all quite unsettling, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was. I mean, you'd think... you get through the week, it's the weekend, and then you'd have something, you know, on the telly that was like freakish, you know, like a documentary about something, maybe that panorama documentary, for example, or, you know, and maybe you'd catch a glimpse on the Friday night that Dr. Strangelove was on.
Yeah.
And then you think you'd have a bit of respite on the dull Sunday, and then you'd turn the telly on about 5 o'clock, and there was Wurzel fucking Gummidge. To just terrify you before you went to bed.
Folk horror.
Absolute horrible folk horror. Words of Gummidge.
What's his worst head? Is it the posh head?
There's
one head that is utterly terrifying. I used to think it was the disobedient head.
Oh.
Or the disnobedient head. But it's not. It's his... fucking... Well, let me have a look. Wurzel.
I feel like I was allergic to it. It really bothered me. I couldn't get my head around it at all as a kid or as an adult. I'm sure I couldn't watch it as an adult. Get my head around it. Found it really disturbing.
And she was horrible, wasn't she, Aunt Sally?
Uma Stubbs, she was horrible in it. Oh, the whole thing was just creepy. It was just creepy.
Yeah, it's his handsome head.
Handsome head. Oh,
a picture of Wurzel Gummidge's handsome head.
Oh, it's God.
The thing of nightmares.
Oh, indeed. Indeed.
Funnily enough, later on, Dave, my sister, who was 10 years younger than me, loved it. She loved Wurzel Gummidge.
Maybe it's just something different. Maybe women translate it in a different way. But for me, it was fucking disturbing. And, the old joke, why did Wurzel Gummidge win the award? Because he was outstanding in his field. Oh. Anyway, never mind. I have to say, though, there was things as well in the 80s. Now you sort of think, oh, Friday night, there you go. Watch some a kind of thriller, and then you'd get something like The Nightmare Man, which is absolutely fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
Which ties in with that whole kind of Cold War paranoia as well.
Yeah.
So if any of the listeners haven't seen The Nightmare Man, I would really advise to get a chance to watch it. I'd watch that.
Yeah. Well, we might cover that in our nuclear season, Dave.
Okay, so I'll hold back on that. No spoilers or anything. We'll just leave that hanging.
Yeah, I mean, just on the public information films, they are brilliant. You can watch them on YouTube. You've got all this advice from Patrick Allen. Yeah. If you don't recognise the name, he's the guy that used to fly upside down in a helicopter whilst advertising Barrett Homes.
Barrett and the Oak Tree.
And he did a lot of voiceover work, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, he's Protect and Survive. He was this authoritative voice giving you advice, such as the time has come to remove the putrefied remains of Grandma from the fallout room. It is important to repress your emotions at this point.
Yeah.
She's had a good innings and was becoming a pain in the arse anyway.
Any corpses must be put in plastic bags and put outside the makeshift den.
Suppress the urge to eat the dead. Yeah. They are riddled with radiation and have evacuated their intestines. Good advice, Patrick, good advice. But one of the greatest bits in this Protect and Survive, because I've been trying to work out how you do all this stuff when you're supposed to stay under the doors for 14 days. So if you look through the leaflet, it tells you to, you know, once you've built your shelter, start going around the house, getting loads of stuff. There's a list there. So you need drinking water.
Yeah.
Lots of drinking water. Remember, it's got to last 14 days. So each person is advised to drink 2 pints a day.
Mm.
So you'll need 3.5 gallons each. Food, tinned food, ideally. No perishables, unless you're going to eat them within a couple of days. But remember your tin opener, because that would be a fucker, wouldn't it?
Oh, can you imagine that?
If you got all the tin stuff in, but then realise you'd left the tin opener in the kitchen.
All you've got is that shitty fucking key on the fucking corned beef. And you've got to pray that it doesn't break.
Oh, God, yeah. You'd end up trying to bite the lids off, wouldn't you?
I know.
Portable radio. Right, so this survival kit in order. So we've got drinking water, food, number two. Number three, portable radio and spare batteries. Your radio will be your only link to the outside world. So take a spare one if you can. Keep any aerial pushed in. You will need to listen for instructions about what to do after the attack whilst you remain in your fallout room. So number four, tin opener, bottle opener, cutlery and crockery. Right. Number five, warm clothing for everybody.
Hang on a sec. I can see the cutlery, but I mean, crockery. I mean, how much crockery do you really need to take? You're not going to take the fucking your best china in there, are you? A bit of Tupperware would be more useful, wouldn't it? Than crockery. I mean, that is so fucking 80s and 70s for you, isn't it? You know.
You've got a bloody pudding bowl on this picture, Dave.
I bet they have.
You're going to be making cakes.
Like Fanny Craddock's going to make a fucking cake. What's fucking going on?
Yes, yeah, so it's got warm clothing.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be fucking cold.
Damn well is.
Yeah. Bedding, sleeping bags, portable stove and fuel, plus saucepans, torches with spare bulbs and batteries, candles and matches, table and chairs.
Fucking hell. Table and chairs. You're under fucking a couple of doors. You're under a couple of doors in the middle of your house.
Well, I thought that, Dave. I thought originally that you had to bring all this stuff into the actual inner refuge, which is under the doors. But I think what they mean is you can sort of leave it all in the fallout room. You can occupy the fallout room after about 2 weeks.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
When everything's safe, when all the, when the fallout's gone, everything's safe after 2 weeks, And you're not breathing in fucking loads of shit, That's, it's such a fucking fantasy. Yeah. It's fucking Walt Disney, isn't it?
It is. Number 10, toilet articles, soap, toilet rolls, bucket and plastic bags.
Can you imagine it? Could you imagine it when you're under the doors and the stench of the shit?
Yes.
The stench. Oh, mate. Fucking hell.
I think there's a bit on one of the adverts where Patrick Allen says, be sure to sanitise properly following defecation. Stand over your child with a stick if necessary. Should you fail to cleanse the anus of the surrounding fallout, you may be at risk of developing a condition known as nuclear arse.
If you feel that you can do it and you can do it with accuracy, maybe shit directly into a bag. But don't think that you can't really use that black bag at some further point. Granny might go in there.
Well, actually, Dave, they want you to be a bit more dignified than that because they've told you how to create a makeshift toilet. So what you do is you remove the seat of a chair, like a kitchen chair, and you stick a bucket underneath it.
Oh, so did
you. You hover over that. But use a polythene bag linings for emptying the containers. And strong disinfectant and toilet paper.
Oh, my God.
So that's the toilet stuff. Then you've got number 11, changes of clothing. So more clothing.
Fucking hell.
More clothing.
What's wrong with just having a few clothes and, you know, stinking a bit? You know, that's the worst of your troubles, isn't it? A bit of BO.
If you're stuck under that shelter for 14 days, Dave.
Well, you'd be ponging, but think of all the shit. Think of all the feces. Think of, like, granny dying on you, which is going to happen, let's be honest.
That does happen in Fred's, actually. And she shits herself.
Jesus, fucking double.
She does. First aid kit.
Oh, yes.
Now, this is interesting. Box of dry sand, cloths or tissues. Now, you think, oh, what's this for? It's a bit, sort of sounds a bit like cat litter.
Yes.
Where the kids are supposed to shit. But it's actually for cleaning your plates and utensils.
Oh,
in a box of sand.
Oh, God. You're fucking kidding me.
Number 14, notebook and pencils for messages.
And why?
Who's the message going to? But maybe you could attach it to
something. You're going to naturally have laryngitis or something. You're going to be sat under a door next to your spouse. You'll be sick of the fucking sight of each other. You're not going to want to send messages to each other.
That's it. I think you're more likely to die from getting strangled by a relative and draw from the nuclear fallout. I mean, that is a pressure cooker under them doors.
Can you imagine it? And the stench, the farting. Someone has wind. Someone has a bad stomach. And you've got your makeshift shitter in there. I mean, come on. You've got to shit in 2 weeks. You can't hold it in for 2 weeks.
I'm trying to find out the bit where it tells you what to do in that situation.
All the
I think you sort of stick your arse outside the shelter and you do it in a bag. And then chuck it to the other side of the room.
It's got to be on it. On the other side of the room. What does that mean? In the corner of the doors. What does that mean, the other side of the room?
It depends how big your fallout room is, doesn't it? Most people are going to be inhabiting very small rooms, aren't they?
Well, it's going to be like the people under the stairs. It's going to be like living under the stairs for 2 weeks.
Well, this is it. It wouldn't be so bad if you were on your own, would it? Or you were with somebody else.
Jeez.
Just one other person. But imagine if you've got kids, young kids.
Kids. Shitting and pissing.
Be horrible. Yeah, but you'd feel so bad for them, wouldn't you?
Oh, terrible.
But it does say, number 16, toys and magazines. So bring some toys and magazines.
Was then, you know, let's play cards again. I mean, it's like, back in the day as well, it would just be cards, wouldn't it? So you wouldn't have a Monopoly. You'd have the longest game of Monopoly ever in your life, you know, in amongst all the tiers. Or endless games of Gin Rummy. Fucking hell. I've got nothing against Monopoly or Gin Rummy. I rather like them both. But if you've been doing it for 2 weeks to occupy your kids, I mean, you're probably wanting to just, like, blow your brains out, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, can you imagine if you say to the kids, come on, just grab a few toys, and your daughter comes back with one of them massive Barbie houses. You're not bringing that in here.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like, it, for me, it'd be like, I'd get me Stretch Armstrong, I'd get me Action Men, I'd get the Evil Knievel, even though there's no fucking room to play.
Put that snooker table back.
Yeah, exactly, the snooker table. That's going to be one of the fucking doors, son. Fuck off.
Right, so you got brushes, shovels, cleaning materials, rubber or plastic gloves, dustpan and brush, and a clock and a calendar. Now, also, Dave, you have to turn the gas off and the electric, and you have to have two dustbins, one for your shit and the other for other waste matter. But there's a guy here, he looks like he's burning stuff. What's he actually doing here? Burning all his kids' books. I don't know. School books. You won't need them again.
Yeah, they're no good to you now, kids. They're useless now, son.
Yeah.
So what about the piss, though? What about the endless amount of piss?
Good point. It doesn't cover the piss.
It doesn't cover the piss. What we're going to do, nip out it during the fucking fallout, have a quick leak up the side of the wall of the house.
Mm.
That's not there anymore.
You know, I remember my dad saying at the time, I want to go in the first few minutes.
Yeah.
And I would be of the same thinking.
My dad said to me, this is just typical of my dad, because this is exactly how he was, right? He said, oh, I'd just drive to the fucking epicentre of the bomb. Oh, yeah. He said, Barbara, bring the kids. Do the kids want to come, or do you want to sweat it out? Do you want to sweat it out?
He probably encountered Patrick Allen's voice on a loudspeaker. Mr. Lawton, return to your home.
Oh, fuck off,
return
Patrick.
To your home. That was the big advice, wasn't it? Stay at home. Now, it does cover the contingency of if you're outside, if you're in the open when the warning goes off and you've not got chance to get back and build your shelter. So it says, in the open, if you are outdoors, take the nearest and best available cover as quickly as possible, wiping all the dust you can from your skin and clothing at the entrance to the building in which you shelter. So apparently it's saying shelter under a bridge, burst into someone's house.
Right. Help!
Or if you can't, if you're not close to one of them, just find a ditch to lie in.
Lie in a
and
ditch.
Cover yourself with your clothing.
Fucking hell. Fucking hell.
But there's a great picture here, Dave. There's got the picture of the fallout shelter. Now, this is a different type of fallout shelter. I don't think it's the one with the doors, unless I'm misreading it, because there was a different way to do it. If you had enough tables in the house, you could put them next to each other and put loads of shit on top of there. But that would, you'd got no headroom then at all, have you?
No.
That's a rubbish idea, that. So anyway, he's ushering his family. This bloke is ushering his family into the fallout shelter. And his wife is carrying a bag of groceries. His daughter, who looks about five, is carrying, looks like some paper, maybe. It looks like a fool's cap file, actually. Maybe she's in charge.
Maybe.
The son...
No, she's got a doll.
No, she hasn't got a doll.
This is the 1970s and 80s. All girls had a doll.
Now, the son... Interestingly, you can't see his face, but he looks very crestfallen. His daddy's putting a comforting arm around him.
Yeah.
You know, he's sort of half comforting, half shoving him towards the shelter.
Going, life's never going to be the same again, son.
He looks about 12 or 11. And he's
football,
carrying...
Football under his arm?
He's got a book.
A book? Yeah, these fucking kids are just fucking specky four-eyed swats. Where's the doll? Where's the football?
Maybe it's a Tell Me Why book. Do you remember the Tell Me Why book?
Tell Me, yeah.
Right, so the dad is carrying a portable radio.
Yes.
Because it's Saturday That's afternoon and he's going to be listening to the match. You know what? This picture, Dave, was actually used on the cover of Radiohead's Karma Police.
Fantastic.
So if you want to see what this picture is, I'm looking at, just look up.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
The single Karma Police.
Wonderful.
Are you going to do that, Dave?
Well, I'm just putting on my tablet now to have a look.
Okay.
But I've also picked off the shelf a very important book from around that time.
Oh, yeah.
That I bought this for George to read, the miserable old sod that I am. And he never got round to it, but I think he will do at some point. The book I have in my hand is Raymond Briggs' When the Wind Blows.
Oh, yeah. What a book.
Which is, and in a way, it sadly parodies that whole business of the makeshift fallout shelter and the feeling that everything's going to be all right. Mum and Dad thinking, we're going to be all right. We'll sort it out. And,
amazing. We did that at school.
Incredible and tragic, you know, tragic and brilliantly done.
We'll get onto that maybe in another episode.
I think we should, yeah. I'm going to look at it now, Lee. Can I just say
part of the nuclear canon?
Oh, indeed. Oh, absolutely. It needs mentioning, doesn't it? Because it's a very important part of it, actually. An important part of that whole mindset that we all fell into in the 80s. Right, I'll shut up now. Sorry. Karma Police.
No, it's all right.
Karma Police.
Single.
Oh, yeah, brilliant. There it is. Oh, yeah. Oh, look at that picture. Can they only think that the kids would have a book under their arm? Can they have something else, like an Etch-a-Sketch or something? Fuck's sake. And he's got a radio. I hope he's got a good supply of fucking batteries with that radio.
Well, the booklet does advise spare batteries. But you know what batteries were like in them days if you put them in a radio? They'd last 5 minutes.
5 minutes, mate. It would only be able to turn it on maybe twice a day. I'm just going to turn the radio on now, dear, to see if I can hear anything. This is Cliff Mitchellmore of the BBC, in the BBC bunker. No change, no change today. Oh, no, it's still the same. God, can you imagine the hell?
I think it would just be full of Patrick Allen. That was apparently the plan, to have...
just Patrick Allen. Oh, that'd be amazing.
Advice on radio.
You turn the radio on and it would just go... There is no news today. This is Patrick Allen speaking on behalf of the government. The government is reorganising somewhere in Britain. No more news today.
They aren't shitting in plastic bags.
They have lovely, lovely hot water showers, plumbing systems, full electric generators. They're lapping it up.
They would have been, Dave, they would have been in the Kelvedon Hatch in Essex, the secret nuclear bunker, which I visited and is amazing.
I bet it is. I really want to go there.
Right, so I'm in a state of trepidation a bit, Dave, because we're going to have to get onto Threads. And I don't know what to say about Threads that hasn't already been said, other than...
Can I just say something anecdotally about Threads? I saw a little bit of it when it first came out, and I just, like, fucking couldn't take it. I'm pretty sure that was the case. Or... I was terrified to watch it, I think. You know, because when it first came out, I would have been 16. And I just think I found it just overwhelming. But when I watched it properly, or... Because I did remember when I watched it properly in the early 2000s, I did remember bits of it. I did remember things in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it utterly... Utterly horrific and depressing, and
it's
horrific. It's a horror film.
It absolutely is. But you're right, David. It sort of took people by surprise because, and it did get a bit of advertising. You know, it was on the front cover of the Radio Times, but no one was prepared, I don't think, for actually how bleak and horrific it was. And I did see it on that day. I do remember. I've got to say, after that, life was just different.
Mm.
It was one of them things that stayed with me for so long. And I remember going into school the next day and other people had seen it. And we were talking about it for ages.
And it, I can see how Threads would have been one of the absolute talking points at school. It would have been something that would have really resonated through school. You know, it would have been like a wildfire. It would have been like a nuclear explosion running through school.
It was, but I remember even getting into conversations with teachers about it. Because it was that affecting.
I think that's good, though. I think that it would be good to talk about it at school with teachers.
What I found out later, that you know, I've looked into this and done a deep dive, obviously. But first of all, I didn't know at the time or until fairly recently that it was written by Barry Hines.
I didn't know that Barry Hines wrote Threads.
Yeah, he did. Because Mick Jackson.
Jesus.
The director. You know Mick Jackson? Have you heard of Mick Jackson?
Yeah.
The TV director.
Didn't he direct The Young Ones?
He might have done, but he did The Bodyguard.
You're kidding.
Whitney Houston film.
No way.
And he did L.A. Story.
And he directed Threads.
And he directed Threads, yeah.
And L.A. Story, the Steve Martin film.
Yeah, yeah.
So oh my God.
But before that, he was working for the BBC. And what he was saying about how Threads came about was that he did this documentary about, you know, the effects of the nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
Which I need to see. It's called The Effects of Armageddon or something like that. And it's narrated by Ludovic Kennedy.
I've seen some of that.
Yeah, I think I have.
I've definitely seen some of that.
So that's how the idea of Threads came about. But it was really difficult to convince the BBC to do it. But again, he said, this is not about taking a side. It's showing it.
Yeah, no, and, absolutely. So they could get away with the idea of the neutrality of the BBC sort of thing.
Yeah. A year before, America produced this.
I was just going to say it now. The film's called The Day After.
Yeah, which is a slick production. It is. I've seen quite a bit of it.
Because a couple of years ago, I was thinking a lot about this very subject, thinking a lot about Threads, thinking a lot about that period in the 80s. And it was all, the whole of it was on YouTube to watch. Oh, right. It's still there, guys, but have a look. It's pretty good. And I tell you what's very significant about it, and I think I'm right in saying this, that when Reagan watched this film, and after it, he was kind of horrified by the premise of the whole idea of nuclear war. And that's what made him come up with the Star Wars idea of being able to create weapons to destroy nuclear weapons if anyone triggered them, and share that technology with the Russians, which, for all his faults, Reagan, that was quite forward thinking, I thought, that whole Star Wars idea. It was quite a humanitarian thing, because I think he realised, this has gone too far. What's the point of going on with this huge stockpile of nuclear weapons?
It's amazing because, you like you say, Reagan was, I don't know how long it took him once he was in power to actually speak to the Soviets, but they said that he was a big danger to things escalating.
It really could well have done, but in a way, though, he was this, because he had this kind of these romantic notions, probably not unlike someone like bloody Trump. He liked to see things, he liked to see visuals of things, and when he saw The Day After, I'm pretty sure this is the truth, he was kind of horrified by it and felt that we need to think of some way of brokering, if not peace, brokering a way of never letting this happen. But what surprised me about that is that was, you know, generic TV show from the 80s when they'd been already been these films in the 60s, like Dr. Strangelove, and just as importantly, a film called Failsafe, which was, I think, a Sidney Lumet. I think Failsafe is a Sidney Lumet film. And many people say, well, it's just as good. It's just as good a film as Dr. Strangelove, but it just takes a very serious approach to the whole matter. Yeah. But it was already there.
Yeah, that's interesting, that. I mean, like I say, I've never seen The Day After, but from what I understood is that it's quite a sort of slick production and it probably, you know, has the tropes of the all-American heroes and that sort of thing. But Mick Jackson...
No, I've got to say, you know, from my memory of it, I don't think it does, you know. I think it presents it in a pretty stark, tough way, you know. And it's got people like... It's got Jason Robards in it. And it's got
Steve Guttenberg.
It's got Steve Guttenberg. Well, obviously, that's going to be a bit of a downward slope. But it has IMDb. It has a 7 out of 10 IMDb, which is pretty good going for this. And that's from over 17,000 reviews. So I think it's quite a decent, mate. I'll tell you what I'm looking at here as well, Lee, very quickly, because I'm seeing all the I'm looking at all these different images on my tablet now of nuclear war films and one thing or another. But that fantastic, iconic picture from Threads of the guy, is it like the traffic warden guy, and he's got the gun in his arm and his face is covered in bandages.
That is the iconic picture. That was the one on the front of the Radio Times.
Oh, my God. It's so compelling. Maybe that was it. Maybe I saw that and thought, maybe I'm going to give that a swerve. But because I was horrified by the whole idea, to be honest with you, mate. You know, maybe by the time I got to 16 or 84, I was kind of trying to sort of block it out of my mind a bit, really, because I remember earlier than that it being a big thing. And we had many discussions. You know, my older brothers were often saying about how we've got bombs that can destroy not just cities, but maybe whole countries. Maybe the world, you know, and that to me was just like, it wasn't just like upsetting. It's like my heart sank.
Yeah.
I felt so upset by the whole
thing. It is quite a realization, that, isn't it?
Huge realization.
I do realize that. But I remember Mick Jackson saying that he saw The Day After, and he cites this scene in a hospital where the hospital is so clean and sanitized. And he's saying, it would not be like that. And if you've ever seen the hospital scene in Threads where they're queuing up and there's blood and guts and everything on the floor, it's just swilling in mess. Yeah, that is quite a harrowing scene, that, amongst many other harrowing scenes. I mean, the idea of the story is it starts off, doesn't it, with Jimmy and Ruth, this young couple. She gets pregnant. And at that time, even though it was probably about 19, 20, it was like, oh, well, we'll get married, we'll live together. I remember thinking when I watched it quite recently, what a miserable sort of existence, what a horrible thing to happen, to get caught at that age, that early age, and then that your life is planned out for you. Just showed how miserable and boring working class life could be.
Well, that was the brilliant of Barry Hines. He was great at showing that. He was great at doing that kind of kitchen sink stuff and showing miserable fucking comprehensive school, working class life, going straight out of school, working in some fucking factory, fucking bullshit. You know,
that's it. Your life is mapped out. You stay at the same place forever.
Yeah.
And your horizons just shrink. So it starts off with that. And the backdrop is that there's this skirmish in Iran. Isn't this? So the Americans are backing this coup, and the Soviets then move in to protect the regime there, and it escalates from there. And the Russians end up firing a nuclear tipped surface to air missile. The Americans respond to that with their own nuclear weapon, and Britain get involved because they're part of NATO. And subsequently, the Russians bomb Britain. And then what's great about it, because you think that you're following the story of Jimmy and Ruth, and Jimmy is just seen running back to his house after the explosion. And then you don't see him again, do you?
No.
The story follows Ruth, his pregnant girlfriend, and she's initially held up with her father and mother and a grandmother. And it progresses to this nuclear winter, and I find that the most harrowing part of the film, actually.
It's horrible.
Just that they can't get anything to grow because the land's been affected.
There's no fertilization. Yeah.
I think there's something happening with the sun where there's UV rays getting through that makes everybody have cataracts and eventually go blind. And her daughter is born. We see her daughter born. She's sort of a bit retarded, isn't she?
Yeah.
And she ends up getting pregnant in her teenage years. And the last scene is when she actually gives birth. And you don't see the baby. You see a little bit of it. It's sort of covered in blood.
Yeah, so. Oh,
and then she just recoils in horror and it freeze frames on her face. The implication being it's either deformed or it's been born dead.
I know. So it's fucking great.
But that's it. That's the thing with Threads, is it just gets steadily worse, doesn't it? You think, oh, God, the explosion. Let's see what happens now, see how they survive. And it just gets worse and worse and worse.
I mean, I think it was the ultimate of the thing with the BBC and ITV probably as well to some degree, but certainly the BBC, BBC Two in particular, they were brilliant at presenting these kind of bleak dramas or these bleak one-off plays about life in Britain. But the Threads is the ultimate because it's a kind of fantasy as well about what could happen, marrying it up with just the bleak existence of the working class anyway, which you would get through Ken Loach kind of films and Mike Lee kind of stuff.
Yeah, and the Alan Clark stuff.
And the Alan Clark, absolutely, mate. Alan Clark, that's the perfect example. In a way, it's kind of like an Alan Clark film, really, Threads.
Yeah.
And to add on this horror of nuclear annihilation with these working class people who have been just left, and let's be honest, they have been left totally to fend for themselves. Now, if it was maybe in the centre of London or in politics and blah, 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 in government, different story, but these people have been just left, abandoned, you know. It's so bleak, man.
The other sort of storyline that goes through it is the civil defence. So you've got these people who are supposed to carry on running Sheffield. So they have this, like, base where they can organise things from.
I really like those.
Under the town hall, I think, something like that.
I really like those scenes, I'll be honest.
Yeah. So they all come in. There's one guy in charge, and he's got his booklet. He's got his handbook, you know, what you're supposed to do. And they can't find out what's going on in the outside world. The communication systems are fucked. And they slowly turn on each other, don't they? They keep snapping at each other because they can't get the information and they can't get anything done. And then the film leaves them for a bit.
Yeah.
And it comes back and they're all dead because they've suffocated.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my God.
Do you know what? As well, it's got some incredible, interesting little cameos in it as well. Obviously. Oh, yeah. We've got to mention, of course, one of the main stars of it, or one of the leading actors within it, is, of course, one of our favourite actors, of course, the great Rhys Dinsdale, baby.
Yes.
Go on, Rhys. I love Rhys Dinsdale.
Yeah, he is great, isn't he?
But looking at this cast list, you've got a great actor from the 80s in it called Brian Grelis. Now, if you look at Brian Grelis, you'll recognise his face straight away. And Ed Bishop, who was the chief in UFO, plays the US president in it. So it's got some great sort of familiar faces from the 70s and 80s, including Leslie Judd as a newscaster in it.
Yeah.
Leslie Judd.
Yeah, I'm just looking at Brian Grelis. I think he was in Brookside at one point.
Yeah, he's been in loads of stuff, hasn't he?
But also Zach Dingle, Dave.
Zach Dingle.
Stephen Halliwell, I think his real name is.
Yeah, wow. Yes, there he is. Bloody hell, Stephen Halliwell. That's interesting, because I'd heard he was sort of like a down and out before he joined Everdale, Stephen Halliwell. but obviously he was a struggling actor, so fair play to him. There you go.
Do you remember the scene where Rhys Dinsdale's dad is doing the thing with the doors and he's getting everything ready? When the warning goes, he's at home with his wife and she doesn't get in the shelter quick enough, and she gets burnt so badly by the blast.
Yeah. So.
And half her face is just burnt off, and you can just feel the soreness. And them two are in the shelter. They can't find the son because he was outside, I think, when the bomb went off. And they go out to look for him. I think the outhouse or whatever has just collapsed, and you just see his legs sticking out. It's just so stark, you know.
It's horrible. There's a picture here of the Kemp family from it, and the picture of the mother, who all her hair burnt off, the eye protruding with burns, the father there with his arm around her, and it's just the absolute look of misery. It is an unredeemingly miserable fucking film, but it was an important thing, though, wasn't it? It was pointing out there's no future. There's no future for civilization to drop the fucking bomb. That's the message. That's the message.
Yeah, yeah.
We've had it. You know,
it made a mockery of the protect and survive stuff, didn't it?
Total mockery. And I think, and as does, and I know we're going to go back to it, as does the Raymond Briggs. I mean, so much of what took place in these things like Threads and When the Wind Blows and many other things that took place at the time, including the stuff in America, was done by probably liberal or left-leaning filmmakers to point out to the Tory government at the time and to the kind of propagandists that this was pointless, the whole thing was futile, and the nuclear weapons were a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, because it was basically giving a big thumbs up to the campaign for nuclear disarmament, which is something else we really need to talk about, which was a huge thing in the 1980s.
Yeah, definitely.
A huge thing. Where's it gone?
Yeah.
Where has it gone? Where's CND gone? It's kind of like forgetting that these things still exist.
Exactly.
This still exists. You know, we're still under the threat of it, the looming threat. But we haven't got CND anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the bloody, that logo is so memorable, wasn't it?
So memorable. And so many people had it and wore it, didn't they? And it identified that they believed in the dismantlement of nuclear weapons. And, of course, the whole thing with Greenham Common, all the women, amazing. I mean, the activism that was there in the 70s and 80s was incredible.
Yeah.
And I think Threads was part of it.
You can always have the argument, has the nuclear weapon been a deterrent? And after Threads was shown, the following night, there was a debate, a Newsnight debate hosted by John Tewser, if you remember him.
I do indeed remember John Tewser.
And I watched it yesterday. It's supposed to be debating Threads, really.
Yeah.
But they don't pay that much attention to it. They talk about the reality. And Robin Cook's on there. He's brilliant.
Yeah.
And they've got this Tory MP and they've got this Lib Dem or Alliance MP, as they were. And then they've got these panel experts that come in now and then. What it showed you is that you could have these very amicable, very respectful discussions without trying to score political points. And they weren't doing that. They weren't trying to say, oh, Labour believe this and that, the Tories believe that. They were mostly agreeing on stuff.
Yeah.
But the Tory guy, he was slagging off Threads, really, because he says it doesn't reflect reality. He says, we're never going to get that close to a nuclear war because everybody on each side knows how absolutely horrific and pointless it would be. We've had these weapons since the 50s and we've never got close to actually using them. So the argument of the fact that they are a deterrent shows that it's true. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm torn on this issue. I don't know what you think, Dave. Well, are they a deterrent? Should we have them? Should we not have them?
Well, I think back in the day they were. I think back in the day there was probably, it was an argument. I suppose you could say it was an argument that has proved true, that it kept the peace in many respects. It kept things divided. But when that Berlin Wall came down in 1989, things changed. And the proliferation of these communist countries into little independent states, that for one started to create some problems. And now you've got lots of different countries with the know-how how to make nuclear weapons. And by God, they've done it. You know, you've got a country like as volatile in the surrounding of Israel, which is a manufactured, controversy. I'm going to be controversial saying it, but it's a manufactured country because of what took place in the Second World War, let's be honest. Yes. So it's created a huge amount of disharmony in that area. But they have nuclear weapons and they have been afforded nuclear weapons by the West.
Yeah.
You know, it's really complicated and it's getting more complicated. It's become more complicated because of the proliferation of the way the world's gone in the last 35 to 40 years. Because when that Berlin Wall came down, it was like the genie came out of the box. You know, lots of different countries, lots of different agendas, lots of different ideas, more terrorism that's been freed. much more extremist Islamic terrorism. So there's always this fear that someone's going to get hold of one and use it in anger, just out of sheer bloody mind.
You won't put it past Putin, would you?
Well, this is it. We've now gone from having a Russia that was a kind of run by a bunch of like old stuff shirts, you know, who just wanted to maintain the status quo, to Russia being run by what you could only describe as like a Bond villain. He's like a fucking Bond villain, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know,
that's a and very good description.
Put it past him. You're so rightly, because you just wouldn't put it past him. The only thing I think with Putin is a man who's so vain as to obviously put collagen in his cheeks and stuff like he does, try and make himself look younger, in the same way that Trump is so vain, would they do anything to jeopardise the short of their own lives?
Yeah.
That's Who the knows? One thing that could end up killing him if he used a bomb. At the moment.
I mean, one of the interesting parts of this debate was there was always this idea that you could throw a few nuclear weapons around between the superpowers and it not escalate into a nuclear war in a sort of Iran scenario, as was depicted in Fred's, you know, in that local area, not let it escalate.
Yeah.
But it was really interesting, the discussion. It's like, well, no one knows that. That has never been tested.
No.
It's too scary a prospect to consider. So they were talking a lot about where the threshold is, you know, where is the threshold where you passed it and then it escalates into a world war.
It only takes one bomb, doesn't
it? So it is fascinating, isn't it? I mean, it is a game of chicken, ultimately.
Yeah. The irony probably is that it won't be nuclear weapons that will end the human race. It'll probably be our fucking general negligence about the climate and about how we've allowed consumerism and industrialization to just ruin everything. And the world will probably burn anyway. It won't be nuclear weapons.
Yeah. All right. On that note, Dave, I think we should bring the pod to an end. So, as I said, this is the first episode in our nuclear season. And we will be back soon with some different topics related to nuclear war.
Don't have nightmares.
This time, they are playing with, at best, the destruction of life as we know it, and at worst, total annihilation. You cannot win a nuclear war!
Is it for real?
Attack warnings for bloody real!
Is it? You can't just do a face like that!